Hello there, and welcome to another episode of our podcast, Everyone Has a Story, the podcast that complements our quarterly lifestyle magazines, Hello Sunshine Magazine and In Noosa Magazine. The spring issues are out on the streets now as we speak. And if you'd like your brand to be part of the big bumper summer issues of Hello Sunshine and In Noosa Magazine, reach out to our team for more details. Okay, on with today's episode of our podcast. Are older women being seen? More importantly, are they being heard? Millennials, buried deep in a social media landscape, seldom recognise what baby boomers have to offer. Today's guest speaks about her purpose of being seen and heard as a septuagenarian. And Kerala, India, with its cultural diversity, rich history and varied landscape that includes the Arabian seacoast, well, it seems worlds away from Dalby, the often hot rural Queensland town where my guest grew up. Why does she go to India every 2 years? We're going to find out. Everyone has a story, and today I'd like you to meet Aldi Johnston. And we start the episode delving into the origins of her name.
Yes, it's short for Aldith, A-L-D-A-T-H. Yeah, it was very difficult for people to get that name right. And so when we started this business, I just insisted on being called Aldi, particularly with phone messages. You don't spell your name every time you answer the phone. So it became Aldi because Aldi was my childhood shortened name.
Yeah.
And long before there was ever a supermarket. So, but people relate to the supermarket now and spell my name with an I instead of a Y. Things like that.
But what are the origins of that first name? That's a real, I don't mean to, with all due respect, that's a real old-fashioned name, isn't it?
It's very old, actually. Yeah. You know the book 1066 and all that?
Yeah.
You find it in there. There was a Welsh queen, except her name was Aldith with a Y, double TH sort of thing, because she was a Welsh queen. And also it was one of the names of the grandmother of William the Conqueror. So it has a history, yeah.
Yeah, I guess if you wear the name, it's good to delve into the history of that name, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it was in the book Seven Little Australians. There was an Aldith McCarthy in there.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that. It was the only one I ever heard of. There's about two in the world that I know of.
And I imagine, again, you would have delved deep into literature and novels because you were a teacher for quite some time. Is that correct?
Yes, but I was more a science, home economics, art type teacher than like a English teacher, although I think my vocabulary is pretty good. that's from having a mother as a teacher.
Right. Let's go back to, I want to get the origins. I know you and George, your husband, childhood sweethearts.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
You've been on that property, around Obeobe Creek in that area for a very long time. Are you born and bred on the coast, or did you come here from somewhere else?
I was born in Dalby, in the Dalby Hospital in 1944. And George was born in Scotland in a place called Forres next to Elgin because it was in wartime and yeah. Elgin was the largest city, so they took things out of the cities. So he was born in Forres, came out to Australia when he was 8. I lived in the bush until I went away to become a teacher virtually.
Yeah. Mm. And how did your paths cross? Where did George land when he came out at 8? Yeah, well, I assume he was with his family at the time. Where did they land?
His father came first. His father actually had 40 people working for him. He had a painting business where he lived in Scotland and decided to come out to Australia. And he came first to sort of pave the way, and he found Dalby, and he actually built the second motel in Australia, which is the Wishing Well Motel. In Australia.
Yeah, still standing?
Yes, I think some people have sort of renovated it a couple of times over the years. Yeah. I met George when we rode our bikes to school, to the high school. When I was 14, I went to the high school there. Prior to that, I'd been at boarding school.
I've been to Scotland. I went there for work many, many moons ago, and I absolutely loved it. I loved the countryside.
Yeah, I loved it too. Yes.
How rich and green is the countryside around?
That's right.
Isn't it fantastic?
Beautiful.
And is Georgia... Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say that Elgin is in the north, and it was just not far from Inverness.
Yeah.
And so it was in a really beautiful part of Scotland, yes.
Did George ever entertain? I'm always interested because my dad came out from Italy in 1952. He came out as a 19-year-old. Was George a slightly different generation? But has George ever expressed a wish or a notion to return to Scotland, or would that not be?
No. No. In fact, he wasn't so fond of being Scottish as my children were. You know, he wasn't very impressed by the bagpipes or any of those things, but of course they were.
Yeah.
No, when he came here, this was his home. Within 2 weeks, he'd sort of lost his accent because he went to school and realised it sounded different. And at 8, he lost his accent in a hurry,
Yeah, I've heard that. Apparently up until the age of 14 or 15, if you move before that, then there is the chance that your accent will change. I find that really interesting. My dad, and I know about Sicily and Italy because it was, you know, ravaged by the war, that he had no inclination or intention to ever go back. He went back to see his mum and dad at some point. And then they travelled just before they passed away. But isn't it funny how the kids think about that heritage, like you mentioned, and really have a connection with that heritage, but the parents generally don't.
Yes. Well, with Rob, that's the second one.
Yeah.
We went back to Scotland and I had him in Scotland. He was born in Elgin. We had a fruit shop when I married George, which was quite a long time after I met him.
Yeah.
He had his own business. He'd started a fruit shop with his brother when George was 21 and his brother's 19, right? And they began this quite large fruit shop. They sold, like, had petrol bowsers, and there was a fish and chip shop, and they owned it at that age. So when we got married at 24, he had a full-blown business, which was very successful, which is a pretty rare thing that might happen these days, but in those days it was possible.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that you were 24 when you married, because I just picked up on a line there where you said you met George and then it took a very long time before you were married. But then I realised, again, childhood sweethearts, that's perfectly fine. I thought he was dragging his feet a little bit there, Aldi, for a period.
No, I kicked him out when he left school and went and did an apprenticeship, in electrician, and he was a very good one. He was dead keen on me, but far too soon for me. I was too young for all of that. So I virtually got on with my life.
Yeah.
But it was always in the back of my mind. It's strangely enough, he was in the fruit shop one day and someone we went to school with came down and said, he said, oh, have you seen Alf anywhere? Oh, yes, she's teaching in Dolby.
You're
and
up.
Then his brother handed him a phone and said, ring her. And he invited me to a ball. And this was in July, beginning of July. We met at the ball, or he took me to the ball on the 12th of July. He proposed that night. I said yes, and we were married 8 weeks later.
Well, things moved quickly back then.
He had a long way to drive to see me, you see.
I was going to ask where you were stationed. So you trained, you studied to be a teacher, and you got stationed back at Dolby, yeah?
Eventually, I went all over the place. I was at Newmarket High School.
Right.
I was in Inglewood, and that was a real experience, teaching in Inglewood.
Why is that?
It was what was considered to be one of the highest drinking places in Australia.
Right.
People used to really toss it back, if you can imagine.
Yeah.
So living there was not necessarily easy to do. So I used to go home at weekends. I'd stay during the week in quarters that were next to the hall. And I escaped at the weekend because there was always something on at the hall. And then you had all these drunken people outside you. Where you lived, so I used to drive back to Dolby. I was eventually, yes, was transferred back to Dolby and became. I was in charge of my area and became the senior mistress there and things like that.
We have a 14-year-old, and I certainly don't envy. I think teachers do an amazing job. But I know from just going and doing reading groups from when my kid was in primary, it's a tough job being a teacher.
Do you know, I think it's tougher now than it was.
Yeah.
I really do. I also think you don't be a teacher unless you love kids, and you have to love the naughty ones as well. And in this day and age, there are children who things happen to them. You have no idea what's happened to them. And it changes their behaviour in some way.
Yeah.
I have example of a boy I taught for in art. And of course, some days he was brilliant, other days he was the most naughty child I could imagine. But he didn't like women, so consequently didn't like any of his lady teachers. And the reason was because his mother had put him out to be fostered. And so but the day he left school and got a job, the first person he ran up to tell was me. So, you know, you've virtually got to know that it's not about you so much.
Yeah.
You're just an authority figure, and things that are happening to them you have no clue about half the time, and you just have to love them anyway. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but
I don't know that people are that passionate about the job anymore. I think it might be harder to be that passionate about the job now. There's so many more children that are children with problems. Yeah.
But what an impression you must have made for him to call you.
That's right. Yeah, I'll never forget that. But you know, often with teaching, very few people will praise you for what you do. In my business here, I would thank my staff nearly every day.
Yeah.
The ones that come and say good afternoon to me as they're going, I always thank them for the day. I actually thank them when I get a good review about them. I'll let them know. If someone said the food was amazing, I'll go and tell them. I all the time let them know what a good job they're doing, particularly if they're doing an excellent one, they'll hear from me. I think probably when I was teaching, I might have one person in a whole year tell me how pleased they are with the work that I'm doing with their child. And the only other person in the school that supported me hugely was the senior mistress when I was teaching later on, because she knew, you know, how invested I was in my job. But it's hard when nobody ever says to you what a great job you're doing. Mm. And that, you know, that didn't happen very much. Well, I don't think parents realize the teacher needs a bit of praise every now and then.
Yeah, exactly right. But what a great, I mean, this kind of dovetails into, for you and George running this business now and have been for a very long time, to pass that feedback on. I'm interested in Matt, you know, I love hearing about how people deal with their stuff and their management skills and their strengths and weaknesses. And you took something from your educational years to realize that people do need to be, you know, I remember once someone saying to me when being in middle management, the ABC, you know, two positives and then the negative or the critique of a particular job. How many staff do you have at Secrets?
Look, I haven't counted them recently, but it's over 30.
Well, you've got a lot then. Yeah. Mm. And what's your, you know, spill the beans on that, you know, I always like talking to small business owners. Again, elaborate a little bit more on how you manage that team. One of the important things that you mentioned, Aldi, was positive feedback. What are some of the other things that you and George do to keep that staff engaged, positive, and always striving for excellence? Because you guys have got a string of awards in a wonderful location, and that's you know, that's down to your management style. Can you spill the beans a little bit more on how you do that, I suppose?
You know, ultimately, because mostly it's left to me, George will chat to people, but it's not his forte. And ultimately, I think it's respect. And I think it is the fact I was a teacher and my job in life and probably across my whole life is supporting people, you know, being kind rather than nasty sort of thing, trying to bring the best out of people. And understanding that people have to learn sometimes. They don't necessarily come in knowing everything, so they have to have some sort of training or tuition, even though they think they know it all at this when they begin. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's support. And when anything happens and someone moves on, so often it's not about you at all. It's not about this place. That people are just got dreams and moving on to the next one. And so you have to just take that on the chin and be a grown-up rather than lose your temper or get angry. I don't do any of that if I can avoid it.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah,
I will give advice to people and they have to understand that's training, that's not criticism.
Yeah.
At the moment we've got a trainee, she's actually an apprentice, and, you know, when she came, I expected her to be more along with her skills than she is. So, but I am actually, every so often, will give her a little lesson in how to improve her efficiency, ways to do things that are quicker or easier. Even though I'm not out in the kitchen as one of the chefs, I have got that training being home economics teacher and having had food science and technology as part of my degree. I can actually advise all of them different times. They're struggling with something not working properly. So I'm probably still teaching. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're saying is you identify an area or something that might be problematic, and you guide and invest, which is great, because
That's right.
not a lot of people do that.
No.
I want to just going back now. You're in Dalby. You're teaching out there. How did you end up by the water, by the ocean? Well, not technically by the, but over where you are now, because you moved there. You had that.
In
You got that.
1975, we bought land in Barun Pocket. We
Yes.
bought our farm. That was in 1975. Prior to that, we lived, well, once we sold the business, we went overseas for a little bit and then came back. We had some flats in Toowoomba, and we came back and we couldn't borrow any money to buy a house, so we lived in one of our flats until we could do that, because at the time that was when I think Whitlam put the stamp on being able to borrow money. You just couldn't get your hands on it
Right.
at that stage. But and I went teaching. So first of all, I had went to Harristown Primary School, because at that time they had there were no spare teaching jobs because they were recruiting overseas, and so there was no spare jobs for me. But after a little while, Toowoomba State High School had a vacancy, and I applied for that one, which was really strange. People said to me, "What do you want to come into high school teaching for? Stay where you are. It's a lot easier. This is terrible. You'll never cope. These kids are really rotten. You will not enjoy here." And I said, "No, I think I'll manage. It'll be all right." And when I got there, I found that they'd given me all the bad classes. Anyone who had a class they didn't like, they'd given it over to me.
Yeah. And
And
what'd you do with those students?
treated them like human beings, and as if they had no, that we did no, nothing. I knew nothing about what they'd done, so I just treated them like normal people I just met. I had a class of year 10s whose teacher could not handle them at all. I just went in then and said, "Hey, where are we up to? What have you been doing? Let me know. Let's see what we can do. Let's see if we can find some exciting things to do. Let's go virtually." And they just got the vibe that I was not going to give them a hard time, that we were just going to work together, and they were brilliant.
Yeah.
So it's just a new chance, I guess.
Yeah.
And I had some year 8 classes that were apparently pretty awful, but I didn't find them awful. And I think I really do think it's sometimes, if you're too precious about yourself in that job, you will not succeed. You've got to, be fair. It's like
Yeah.
I try to be fair here,
Yeah. Well,
and it works.
you sound very calm, you're very reasonable, and it sounds like this is you've brought this to whatever career and pathway that you've had.
Do you know what? You don't survive unless you do.
Yeah.
It's hard enough sleeping anyway, being like this, and being panicked over every jolly thing that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you can't. You've got to be calm, and you've got to be able to be resourceful in your solutions, because it's always about a problem to solve. One of the things I do is I try to employ people who have more than one skill, so that they can swap in and out of different areas, and that works. The day we're short of cleaning staff, and there's a couple of people who work in the cafe who can clean, we can swap them out into that job. You know what I'm saying? This
Yeah.
is what we do. And people can help out with prep and stuff like that. Not one not be might not be their job they do all the time, but there are people who have those skills. So you always try and get people with more than one skill.
Yeah.
It works,
That's a
yeah.
nice piece of advice. You'll never get caught short. Was the when did you open the doors on Secrets? Was it early 90s? Am I correct?
We did the whistle stop in 93,
Yeah.
so by 94 that was being let. It was the Beebaran railway station that we renovated, and we were originally going to do camping up there, and it was going to be the place where the person who ran the camping would live. And we found this school teacher who had all the resources to do that, and then when he realized he was going to have to generate his own income, he got scared and said, "Oh, I can't do this," because he was used to having the pay packet every fortnight that you
Yeah.
do when you're a teacher. So he said, "No, I'm not going to do it." So we just thought, "Oh, we'll just let it instead." We still have the permission to use that area for camping. So one day maybe glamping will happen there. It's on the cards, but anyway, at the moment it's not happening. So we just made it into an absolutely beautiful place where people could stay. And it's still, to this day, people prefer it over our tree houses. Yeah, and that was what we started with. Then started in 1997 with the luxury tree houses. That's like possums and water lilies and lizard's lair, two frogs.
Yeah, Carly's
the bower.
Carly's story painted a beautiful picture of the property as it is.
Yeah.
It was moving into hospitality, and you talked about, you know, the other gentleman that you came from teaching, the security of a regular pay. Was moving into hospitality something that you and George, and running your own business, was that something that you had spoken about for a long time, or was it very
No. We when we were resumed, and that was the worst shock.
Yeah.
When we realised we were going to be, we sort of obviously made everything as beautiful as possible so we'd get a reasonable resumption price. We got criticised for that, by the way. I can't understand why anyone would not do that. But anyway, we had 640 kiwi fruit vines all ready to go, and they hit the market before anything else. They would have been quite a lucrative thing, and we only managed to have 1 year of that, and we lost the farm. So we were able to then, we bought what was left of our neighbour's property. He was a blacksmith, and we became very good friends with him over the years, and he didn't want to stay, so he sold us the 80 acres that he had left. Now, we had thought we might put a couple of cabins down on our creek on the farm. We never got round to it, of course, but meantime, George is, you know, dreaming away, and after a little while, he says, I think we might build some cabins on that land. And I said, all right. I'm sort of thinking, really? Anyway, after a while, I just said, you're dead serious, aren't you? And he said, yes. I said, all right then. So I went off and did some TAFE courses in promotion and how to keep my books and all that sort of thing, the bookkeeping side of it. So that's the area I could do. And meantime, we were setting it up, and we decided on tree houses. We tried to get architects to do us a design that we liked. They'd come up things with Besser Block and Mini Orb and stuff, and we didn't like it. So we thought, well, we'll just try and design it ourselves. And that's what we did. With the help of a really good draftsman, a good friend of ours, who's helped design practically everything we've got here, and our son and our brother-in-law, we designed the tree houses as they are. And what we've been able to do is create something that's, you know, timeless rather than a particular style. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And because it's 26 years and people walk in there and still go, oh, wow, you know. And people even cry when they see it sometimes. I'm serious.
Yeah.
Sometimes their partner might have something special ready for them. It might be a love heart on the bed. We did one yesterday where he had a message, and we put it on a piece of paper, typed it up beautifully, and then arranged the love heart around this message. Well, they just burst into tears. Things like that happen, and people even cry when they leave sometimes because they've just had such a lovely time.
Yeah, isn't that lovely?
And a lot of it's to do, I think, with the design, the fact that it's designed in such a way that people connect. You know, the swing seat on the deck, you sit there together as a couple. You don't read. You don't switch the TV on. You just sit, hold hands, and absorb the atmosphere and the view and being together, you know. Another thing is, if you're in our ensuite, you can look down and talk to someone in the spa bath, which is in the lounge. Those are the sort of things we've done to create this connection.
Yeah.
And, of course, then we've tried to do it as beautifully as we possibly could, and everyone who had a skill in this area's head popped up when they realised we were looking for clever people to do stuff. And our blacksmith, who was a good friend because he was a friend of the blacksmith friend we had, he'd come out from Germany, what he's done has just been so phenomenal for our cabins, because the carving's beautiful, and Jack Wilms has done that, but that ironwork with the carving just elevates it.
Wow. I mean, that's you don't hear that that term very often anymore, the blacksmith, do you?
No.
Thinking back to your days in Dolby and where you are now, Aldi, are you where you thought you would be when you were maybe a teenager and thinking about a career or a career path or travel? Are you where you thought?
Strangely enough, before I sort of decided to marry George, I was thinking of heading to New Zealand to doing a degree in home economics because they didn't have degrees in home economics in Australia. And I was thinking of going over there. I had no idea or no clue where that would lead me. I'm a person who's very adaptable. I could live anywhere. You know, George is planning a retirement house at the moment, which for us down the track. And he's so invested in it. And I just said to him, I just want it comfortable. I don't really care whether it's any particular place. It's the people that count with me more than the place. And my parents were never surprised about this. They always thought I'd go somewhere amazing. But I never, ever planned it. No, this, you just grab your opportunities and you do the best you can virtually.
Does that make you a risk taker?
A little bit, I think.
Yeah. Well, yeah, listen.
You have to be. You've got to jump off the edge. You can have an idea, but if you don't follow through on it, you're never going to get anywhere, are you?
Yeah. But just hearing you say, you know, you were prepared to leave Australia, not that New Zealand's far away, but to go anywhere, that implies a degree of risk taking and not throw caution. Would you throw caution to the wind, or did you plan? Like, are you a planner? Do you?
I tell you what, I'm a saver. I don't spend money much. I've always been fairly frugal because it's the way we brought up. You know, living on a farm, even down to the use of power, water, everything, because we had to provide it all for ourselves. So, and my mum had to be really careful with money and so on. So I've always been pretty careful with my money. So I've always had savings, and I would never go away on a holiday and not have money still in a bank account somewhere.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I just think it's too risky. A lot of people do that risky stuff. Making sure that there's a backup money for whatever happens.
You got two boys, you and George?
No, I've got two girls and a boy. Rob, our son, he's now 50.
Yeah.
He's been involved with this business from the time he was like 20, 21.
Yeah.
And, yeah, he had a bad accident and he'd done a year of uni. And so after that, he didn't want to go back and do engineering. In fact, he should never have done engineering. He really is excellent with wood. So he came back and learned how to build things instead. Very good with rocks. He's done all of our rock work.
Yeah, I know.
And our daughter, Kath, she's older than him. She's 52 and she's does all our graphic art, or she did until recently. The moment now she's building a dome house at Ensby Road at Flaxton.
Nice.
And it's the first one in Australia to receive permission to be built. So it's getting a lot of publicity. She won a prize with Airbnb, $100,000 to help finish it, and it'll be finished in the next few months. And she has to let it with Airbnb for a year, but after that she'll live in it herself. But it's different, but it's really quite lovely. And then the youngest one, she's just an amazing person. Her family keeps her busy. She's got an autistic child and Asperger's one, and her life revolves around enabling them, really.
Aldi, what advice, like I said earlier in the episode, I'm a dad and you know, Deb and I have a 14-year-old son. What advice, it sounds like you've got three good ones there, three good kids. What advice can you give me? Because I worry a lot about my 14-year-old.
You have to find out what they love doing. You know, Rob didn't find that out really until after he decided that engineering wasn't what he should have done, landscape design, not engineering, because he's excellent at that. You've got to find out what they love to do and then try and build a career around that. That's the secret to a happy life, doing what you love.
And I guess you know, you said Rob came to that later in life, trying to get that out of a 14-year-old's probably not.
No, I think it's probably too soon to worry about it. But I think you need to encourage him to do a lot of different things, like do the sports, go
Yeah.
camping with him, do all the outdoor stuff, and get a connection so you talk.
Yeah.
Even when it's hard to talk, it still can. I can recall my children, I always talk to them. When the tiniest age, I would answer every question. Obviously, you don't get into great detail some of those questions when they don't even understand it, but you answer every question. And we used to have a thing that I thought about because I used to do it with my classes at school. If there was an issue or problem, as a family, we would solve it rather than have a row. So there was an appointment to meet in the lounge, and everyone sat in the lounge, and the issue was raised, and then everyone had a chance to solve the problem. Nobody interrupted while that person talked. So each child, whatever it was, and my problem often was Saturday mornings is time to clean the house, but it's not happening. How can we solve this problem? You know, that sort of thing. And they'd all have an answer, and we'd think about what would be the best way to try, and then we would go and try it. We actually solve them t problems together. So I think it's a good thing to do with a kid, is to actually have them to know that they can talk and what's on their mind with you.
Yeah.
Or have someone in their life that they can do that with.
Yeah, like a mentor who's, yeah,
Yeah,
understand.
no, with my grandchildren, my daughter's only a single mum, and they were IVF kids, and I have encouraged them to go and spend a couple of days every holidays with their aunt, with Lisa in Brisbane, because Lisa has the time. They love her, and then they move down to Brisbane, and they're out on their own. They'll always have a bolt hole to go to, and because she's really, really good with those children, and I think she learnt a little bit from me. She says she did, about how to bring up children that are happy in their skin, you know.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's not. And can I turn this one around? When we had Max when he was young, or when you first have kids, people say they come into your lives because they're going to teach you something. And I've kind of forgotten that over the last, 10 odd years. But what have your kids taught you? I'm really interested in your perspective.
My youngest one's taught me a lot because she's had a really tough life. In the last week, her eldest son, who's 20, he's this habit of punching walls, you know, and he'll make a hole in the wall. When he's so stressed out with his autism that he has to get rid of his anger somehow.
Yeah.
And the other day, he breaks windows. She's always fixing windows, but usually only hits them once. This time he went back and hit it again, and this time he actually cut an artery,
Oh.
and she had to put a ligament on his, you know, on his arm to
Yeah.
stop it bleeding and get him to the hospital. That's the sort of life she has, and she is calm. She said, got in the car, sat him in there. He wasn't losing blood, so it was all right. Turned on some music and started singing on the way. She said, "Mum, otherwise I'd have panicked my heart out." So she just switched the lanes, in other words, when she got in that car, and she drove sensibly. She said, "You never see ambulance going over the speed limit," so I didn't. You know, this is her. She amazes me. I learn things from her all the time. One of the things I have learned, though, whether I learned it from her or some other way, is you have to live within your own boundaries. And even with your children, when they get older and they have quarrels and things like that, you don't own them because they're not you and your problem. And if you do get involved in it, that's when your immune system breaks down, you know, you become ill, all of the rest of it. So you have to have a life that you're happy with, and live within your boundaries with it. So if we have things going on in the family, well, I'll go out to dinner with all of them separately rather than a family gathering because two of them are not talking. You know, that's what I mean? I
Yeah,
just
right.
don't buy into the issue. Just one last thing. I
Yeah.
have people all the time come and say to me, "You're amazing.
Yeah.
Keep this up," because people tend to write off older women, and I can't find work unless it's their own work, like me. I probably wouldn't have a job. The issue is that a lot of women are still capable of contributing, but they're not given the opportunity. So I feel blessed in one sense because, but I am at the end of my career because George is 80 this year and I'm 79, so not far behind him. And I'm finding working every day, the hours I work is just probably a bit too much. But yeah, it's I don't ever regret it though. I still run this business and I still make decisions about it. I have help with that. Obviously, you're silly if you don't. But I have to have my head around it all. And if I'm talking to someone who's managing my kitchen or my restaurant, I expect them to listen. And I think people switch off if you look old and doddery. So that's why the hair still is coloured. And, I like to speak in it as if I'm empowered. I just don't let people get away with the lack of respect that can happen. So, yeah, if people think that they can just go off and do their own thing and change things without informing me, they certainly hear about it from me. One of the things that makes me like I am is a long time ago, I ended up with breast cancer and I managed to survive it. And I also got in touch with someone who said, you should go to an Ayurvedic health centre in India. I do that every 2 years. It keeps my weight in check, keeps me healthy, and I've learnt by using more alternate methods to keep well, I'm actually maintaining a level of wellness which is beyond, well, it's not usual at my age. So there's more to it than just what you heard. It's all about, it's a lifestyle. Does that make sense? I'm not taking a Panadol for at least the last 10 years. It just picks my health back up. If I'm feeling at a low ebb, hop on a plane, and I always go business class and get wheeled around the airport so I don't wear out by the time I've got some energy when I get there, because sometimes I've gone and I've been so worn out, the
From the
first week's
flight.
being wasted because I was so tired. But it's certainly very helpful to me over the time.
How did you find out about it?
Strangely enough, Adele, who's from Lilypillies, her mum took Adele and her sister there. And then Adele told me about it. She said, you should go. So I did. And I took my daughter-in-law with me. And most times I go, my daughter-in-law comes too.
Couple of quick questions. If I did my maths right, you had breast cancer about 16 years ago.
Yeah, around about that. Yeah. I can't remember exactly. That's how unimportant it is now because
Yeah.
I've got all these things I do to make sure I don't get it again. Yeah.
And LD, when you go to India, how long is that set?
Usually 3 weeks.
Oh, it's for 3 weeks. Just at that the retreat, yeah?
The 3 week sets a habit. When you come back, all those bad habits you've allowed to introduce over the last 2 years,
Yeah.
you've got rid of them out of your life. And as long as you don't make a mistake and do something wrong, you can keep up that habit for a long time. So this is to do with diet and all of that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Look, I love it. That's great. I've really enjoyed this chat. Thanks, Aldi. Aldi Johnston was my guest on today's episode of Everyone Has a Story. And if you think there's something in there that your friends or members of your family might relate to, then please share the episode around on your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.